So the name of the series, Naked and Unashamed, was not my first choice. My first choice was How to Train Your Dragon. That's the name I wanted. Because I think for many of us, it feels more descriptive. It's like, there's this thing inside of me, and it wants to get out, and how do I train that thing? How do I get it under control? Yeah, we'll stop with that analogy there. But what is love? If I were to get up here, baby, don't hurt me. If I had to get up here and try to convince you for however long, with whatever means, that actually this whole idea that you would find someone, that you fall in love and you live happily ever after is actually ridiculous. Just forget about it and move on with your life. No matter how well I try to convince you, you will not believe me. You will walk out here and say, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Or you'll say, I see what he's saying, but I'm going to try to be the exception. I know the odds are small, but you know what? I'm going to go for it anyway. And I think that's got something to do with the image of God in us. That even though we think our odds are small, we're like, there's something in there. There's something in that, that there would be a person, that there would be something, there would be a relationship, which is more than just mates going to go play some touch rugby together or brying on the weekend or something sort of, you know, just to occupy my time. There would be something deeper than just a little relationship. We desire something there. There's an image of God in us that two people would say to each other, the two of us, for one lifetime. And I don't think I can convince you otherwise. I want to make that point up front because I think some of us are so cynical, not because we want to be, but just the experiences of our past, our upbringing, everything around us. We desire that it's true, but we recognize that this is not easy. This is not something that people just do. In fact, if you look at the statistics of the number of marriages that stay together, the last time we did the series, it was an awesome graph I had. I still have it, but I don't want to use it again. But it shows what the likelihood of you still being married after so many years, given on the decade in which you were married. And what it shows you is that if you were married in the 1980s, you are statistically the very worst at marriage. Every generation before that got slightly worse, and then every generation after that actually gets slightly better. So we're getting slightly better at marriage. But like a good statistician told me, never believe a stat you haven't doctored yourself. In 1960, only 3% of people would never get married. This is the United States. Whereas today, in the States, it's 1 in 4 people. 25% of people our age in the States will never get married. So yes, people are slightly better at staying married, but there is something in people where they realize this is not easy at all. So that desire is in us. We are made in the image of God. We want it, but we don't know how to get there. Can you put the next slide up? So now, if I had to tell you that there's this couple that are getting married, and every weekend people get married, and they stand there, and they're both like, yeah, I think we've got about 5 years, and then we're done, on their wedding day. There's something wrong with that. You're like, no, that's not even right. That's like, because everyone on their wedding day is 100% convinced that this is it, that this is the person. Some people are a little bit nervous, but they are determined. They've made that decision. They're saying, this is it, this is me, this is the person, and we're going to do this. And yet, more than half of them don't make it. Which asks, you know, it can't be a question of will. It's not like everyone up there is just faking it at the front of the church. Like they say their vows and they're like, yeah, but I don't really mean it. Like, finger behind my back. Because you can't, because everyone else is behind you when you're saying it. But like, it's not a question. It's not a question of your desire. It's your question of your ability. Are you able to? And many people arrive there believing that they can, but they can't. And so we read in Proverbs, I got these two out, from chapter 14, the wisdom of the prudent is to discern his way, but the folly of the fools is deceiving. You see, wisdom looks at not only the destination you're going to, but the path you're going to walk to get there. It discerns his way. The simple believes anything, but the prudent gives thought to his steps. See, we can believe anything, but real wisdom is when we see that the road we walk takes us to our destination. The road we walk takes us to our destination. You arrive on a wedding day. It's like you're at a destination, but actually that destination is not your is not a wedding day. It's, are you ready? Are you ready? So what road do we want to walk? What road do we want to walk? How do we get there? I was having a chat with a guy the other day, and we were just talking about stuff. And the conversation I was having with him, he's in Res, and I was like, as I was talking, like my mind was just flashing back to Res days, which for me was more than a decade ago. It's old buddy. Not a day, thank you. And I remember, and I like, it's easy because I'm married, and something Andrew also said to me is you get like single amnesia. You kind of like forget what it's like. You're like, you get married and you're like, oh, just do it, you know, like what's the problem? And then you're like, but when you're single, you're like it's not that easy. And in this conversation, it's like I think God like opened up something for me, and like those emotions came back. And as a guy, like, you only have like one or two emotions, so like both of them came back. And I remembered what it was like in Res. In my second year in Res, the group of mates I had, at the age of 20, I was the only virgin. And it wasn't like these were a bunch of heathens. Most of them went to church. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, it's not a question of desire. It's not just a question of what do you want, but how do you intend to get there? Okay, so I'm going to take you back to my high school quickly. So believe it or not, I did Maths Olympiads at high school. And I tried everything to get out of it, but they kept putting me back in. And so I had to go back to school on like a Saturday morning and do Maths Olympiad training once. And there's a point at the end of the story. They go through how do you problem solve in a very like open-ended like problem-solving thing. And the number one step, I don't remember anything else from that day, the number one step was, do you understand the question? Which is weird when you're talking to people that are like quite good at maths and they're doing Maths Olympiads. Like, number one, do you understand the question? Do you understand the problem? Do you understand what's wrong? And so what they would do is they'd give you a problem, and then you would sit there for 20 minutes, and at the end, you would have to explain how you got to your answer. And even if you didn't get to an answer, you had to like just say, this is the method I try to use, and then I ran out of time. And often you'll get a little bit of the way through, and then the instructor will say, so do you understand the question? And you think you do, but and suddenly you realize you actually don't. You spend 20 minutes. And you don't understand the question. You don't understand the problem. And it stuck with me, because often we're trying to solve a problem, but we don't actually understand the question. We don't know what's wrong. And so we can look at all these people that arrive on their wedding day, make incredible promises, and can't keep them. We believe we're different, as they also believe that they're different. But we cannot see how. We cannot see what the problem is. And so what I want to go through tonight quickly is, what is the problem? What is that problem that we have? What is that thing that makes all those people liars? And I say it gently, because they didn't intend to be, but they said vows that they had every intention to keep. They were liable to keep them, but they had no ability to. It's like going to the bank, taking out $1 million, burning it, and then saying, oh, I don't know. You're still liable to pay it back. You had no ability to pay it, but you're still liable. Okay. So, we're going to lighten this up a bit. Third slide. Anyone with a pulse can fall in love. But how do you stay in love? That's actually the question. Anyone with a pulse can fall in love. Some of you are like, but nobody wants to love me. We'll deal with that on a different week. But anyone with a pulse, it doesn't actually take much. Every Hollywood movie, even if it's got nothing to do with love, there's a love interest. It's like Transformers, there's some woman that's falling in love. It's like, and a guy, and they're just like, whoa. It's like Batman, there's a love interest. I don't know why there needs to be a love interest in Batman, but she's there. It's like it's everywhere. It's like it's not hard to fall in love, but staying in love, that's the difficult part. So there's this idea that Christians like to put out there is that it's not about the feeling. It's not about the feeling. You must choose it. And you must keep choosing it. And it often gets put out there like, love is not a feeling. It's a choice. Have you heard it? Am I the only one that's ever heard that? Some of you are like, yes, no. Okay. Well, if you've never heard it, don't believe it. And here's why. If I said to Jess, hey, I choose to love you. It's like, it's not exactly what, she's like, And actually, in our marriage, that's a bit of a joke. Sometimes it's like, she's like, oh, sorry, I forgot this. I'm like, don't worry, bug, I choose to love you. And we're like, oh, whatever. Because our idea is not just that we keep choosing it. It's like, I choose it. But that we want to choose it. Because some people stay married, but you really hope they didn't. Like, secretly, you're like, yokes are terrible together. You're choosing it, but it's like there's nothing there. And you see, God chose us, and he acted on that decision, but that's not the love. The love is that he would choose to send his son. Whenever the Bible says that God loved us, it's that he sent his son. God has like an emotional love for us. It's not just a decision that he makes. He also makes a decision. He also acts on it. But there's an emotion behind it. And so we have this idea, and some Christians are stuck in there, must just choose it. But Paul himself says that's not right. When he talks about love, and if you've ever been to a wedding, you've probably heard this scripture, love is patient, love is kind, doesn't envy, it's beautiful, it's all those things. But he also says this thing just before that. He says, if I can prophesy, and if I can do this, and if I can do that, but I don't have love, I'm just like a banging gong, it's all worthless. And he's going through how it's actually the essential characteristic. And then he ends off with a statement, if I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, but have not love, I gain nothing. So if I give everything away for Jess and I give my body over to hardship for Jess, I can still do that without having love. Do you get it? I've chosen it, but there's no love. How do you maintain that in a relationship? Now, I want to take a step back now quickly. Not everything is about marriage. But when we talk about romantic love, we're talking about finding one person. We're talking about, this whole series is not going to be like, this is what marriage is, this is what marriage is, this is how marriage works. It's also going to be for single people. But I want to put a hope in you for something more. Like this week, going through that thing again of me and Rez, there was a hope in me, and it kept me. Just like, it's not easy. I'm not going to pretend it isn't. But I want that hope to grab us. Okay, so I want to answer two questions quickly. What does a good relationship look like out of the Bible, and what does a good marriage look like? So the first one. What does a good relationship look like? I think it's the Philippians one. Okay. Now, we're going to look at the standard. We're going to look at what is that thing that keeps people loving each other, that keeps that emotion alive. Because if all we focus on is do I feel love, sometimes you don't, and sometimes you do. It's a very fickle thing to base a relationship on, and yet it is the thing we judge a relationship by. So, Paul says, he's talking about all relationships, but we're going to apply this specifically to romantic ones. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself. So what that means is for myself and Jess, I must value her above myself, which sounds really simple. Just value Jess above myself. Okay, number one, not looking to your own interests, but to the interests of the other. Okay, what are Jess's interests? What are my interests? I'm going to count hers above my own. Lacquer, we can all do that, at least for a while. You see, you've done this. You've fallen in love, and you've done that. And suddenly it's like, you know, do you jog? Yeah, I jog all the time. Yeah, all the time, of course. I do that, yeah. I'm a big jogger, yeah, I jog, yeah, run all the time. Yeah. And then he asks you, like, hey, do you watch rugby? Yeah, love rugby. Love it, yeah, all the time. That weekend, you're like, oh, you've got to buy rugby jerseys. It's like you're suddenly very interested in what they're interested in. You're like, there we go. You have no problem putting them above yourself. It's starry out, but you just can't maintain it. You can't keep it going. So the standard is simple. I must just value her more than myself. Sure, have no selfish ambition. Put her above myself. Put her interests above me. We do that and we're all fine. Great. And he says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Jesus Christ, who, being in the very nature God. So he starts to go through with the... stuck to me. He goes through the ultimate example of what this looks like. Now, in putting Jess first, I'm not trying to prove I'm right. You see, Jesus could have walked around, and he was the only person that could have done this because he had the God card. He could have been like, I'm right. But he comes and puts my interests first. And here's the crazy thing, is his interests were way more important than mine. You see, it hasn't got to do with who's got the most important interests. Because I can see how I can put Jess's interests first, but only if she can convince me that hers are more important first. But Jesus has the most important thing. He is God. He has the most important interests. He could have walked around and said, you're wrong, and so are you, and you, and you, and you, and you. You could have gone sinner to everyone and been completely right, but there would have been no redemption for us. He chose to put us first. That's the example of the relationship we have. He did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. I'm in the way of my own text. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. So, how far did he take this? He took it to the point of death. How much must I put her interests ahead of mine? To the point of me dying. Simple. Can anyone see a problem with this? It's like, the problem is that it's like, if I was raised in a perfect family, had a perfect history, a perfect past, everything was great, Jess was exactly the same. Just like everything there, 100% confidence, it would be tough. But the problem is, it's not. We each have our own baggage, we have our past, our parents were... maybe not the greatest. Maybe they have a good marriage, but it's not the best. Maybe both our parents have a good marriage, but they're very different. There's just so much that can go wrong here. I can't apply that completely. I can't do it entirely. You see, the problem isn't that I don't desire to do that. It's just that I get in the way. I'm the problem. I want my own interests. I can act like I don't for a while. I fall in love and I do for a bit, and then suddenly it's, but my interests. But what about, you know, who's the most important here? So we go to, it's a 1 John 4. So this is John speaking. He says, dear friends, let us love one another. So John defines what love is. He says, for love comes from God. Anyone who loves has been born of God and knows God, and whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. You see, we come with a past. We come with a history. We're looking for a good example. We're looking for something, and we look all around us, but there's only one place this love can come from. There's only one love big enough to anchor this love. I think I've got this. The point I'm getting, trying to get across is that the standard that you get to marriage and you're ready, there are things we can do, but the standard is so high, it's actually so difficult. And I don't want to, it's going to get to a good spot soon, don't worry. I don't want to discourage people. But actually, unless we know the Father, we do not know love. We do not know it. I want to end with this example. I joined 3CR a long time ago, and the guy that was leading 3CR at the time was a guy by the name of Nick. And Nick was like, he had one rev. It was like flat out. It was like 5,000 RPM. He was super intense. He was just like, he was never calm, never chilled. He was just, the guys are laughing, guys are knowing. He was just like, the whole time. And I remember sitting there like, this guy is intense. He must be such a pain to live with. Like, really. He must be terrible. And I enjoyed the church, so I stayed for a while. And then one day, I had got my tea and coffee, I turned around, and there was his wife. So I'm like, coffee in hand, and she's like, hi, I'm Glenda. I'm like, hi, Matt. You know, she's like, you knew, whatever. We chatted for about 2-3 minutes, and I walked away, and the first thing that hit my head was that either, she was such a lovely person, she was just so lovely. I was like, either she's not really married to him. Or he's not the guy I think he is. And there was something, there's something in there. When you meet someone, you meet what their marriage is like. So when you meet someone that's in a terrible marriage, even if they're a good, like a great person, and you can see it, you can see the impact that it has on them. And when you meet someone, when I met Glenda, I knew in her marriage she was loved, without a doubt. And that the guy I thought I was seeing was not quite the guy, the same guy that loves his wife. There was something different. And in Ephesians 5, if you think the standard of love was high, if you think the standard of relationships was high, Paul starts going through husbands and wives. This is what it is. This is what it's like. So he starts with wives. He says, wives, submit to your husbands. Just as the church submits to Christ. I'm like, yo, that's harsh. That's like, it's like a lot to say. And then it gets worse, but specifically for the husbands. It says, husbands, love your wives like Christ loves the church. And Jesus died for the church. It wasn't like a little bit. It was like he went all the way. And then he ends off with this statement. So he goes through all of that, and you end up with like but how do you do that? Like, how do you reach that standard? And he says, this is a profound mystery. I'm talking about Christ and the church. You see, when we see a bride that has been loved, we know something about the husband that's loving the bride. When we see a church that has been loved, we know something about Jesus. We can answer all sorts of questions. You know, where's the line? How far is too far? How do I do this? How do you do that? But are you loved? Are you loved? Because when someone meets you, they'll see things about you, but they will know, they can see whether you loved. And if you're looking for that love in a marriage, you won't find it. It only comes from one place. There's only one love like it. And I, like, my anguish tonight is that I wish I could explain it to you. But even Paul says it's a profound mystery. That there are many voices that speak to us. But surely the voice of our lover should be the loudest. And if it isn't for you, I'm not saying go and find it. I'm saying when the voice of your love is the loudest, it drowns out those other voices. The voice of your family, the voice of your own insecurity, your past. All those voices get drowned out. This is a profound mystery. And I'm speaking about Christ and his church. My desire for you is not that you would learn how to pretend to take the right steps. I'm going to use a rugby analogy. I'm very sorry for those of you who don't play rugby. Often you come off a rugby field and you've got like bruises and cuts on you and you have no idea where they're from. Absolutely none. Sometimes I would come up and there were like rack marks all the way down my leg. I have no idea. They're like there's skin missing and I can't remember it happening. Because you see, when you get into the game, when the ball's anywhere close, you are not concerned for your body. Not at all. If you don't play it, you think it's weird that you would run flat out into someone and then you just get up like, I'm okay. You really are. It's funny. You really are okay. It's because something else has grabbed you. There's another mission. There's something else. And you get up and you go again. And you go again. And I can teach you all the steps of rugby. Okay, maybe not me, but I could get someone to teach you all the steps of rugby. I could, the best technical rugby player ever. Ever. And the first time someone hits you on a field, you're going to be like, that's just too sore. I'm not doing that again. You've got to get why you play rugby first. You've got to get that first. When you get that, even when you do it all wrong and you get flattened, you get up and you're like, okay, now how do we do it right? And it's this thing. It's this thing. It's that love that God puts in us. It doesn't matter what scars we have. It doesn't matter how many hits we've taken. Those things don't matter anymore. You get up and you're like, oh, look, and you go again. And I'm not talking about being stupid. I'm saying those words of that song, when his blood runs through our veins, something else happens. Something else happens. And this series, my hope is that we get very practical on certain things. But I don't want you to miss this, because there's no ways you can date without getting hurt. Even if you date the person you eventually marry and everything goes well, marriage hurts sometimes. You take a hit, but that voice of your lover must be speaking louder. It must be speaking louder.
We can say, Matt, I thought you're going to teach me how to be a lover. But Jess says next week. You know what? If we don't understand that you're going to do a lot of damage to someone, and I'm speaking to men and I'm also speaking to ladies, but you'll do a lot of damage is going to happen if you don't have that voice of the lover whispering to you. Overcoming the scars, overcoming the past. I lived in Nick and Glenda's, those people that led the church. I lived in their house for a few years. We looked after their children. The 1 year, we looked after their children for the equivalent of 5 months of that year because they were traveling that much. I know that household. I know their children. You can hide things from the pulpit. You can't hide things in your home. I know that couple. I know that lady, that she lives in the most spacious place under the amazing words of her husband, who thinks she is the most beautiful woman in the world, who thinks that her cooking is the best, and it's not, who thinks that, but you know what, he chooses her over himself. And that man is so, it's seemingly arrogant, arrogantly confident about the things of life and the things of God. Why? Because there's a woman that believes in him and thinks he is better than anyone else in the world and believes that when he says something, it must be true. You see, that man lives with the confidence because of this woman who speaks to him. Because she hears the whisper of her lover in heaven. She's able to whisper to her lover. And their relationship is what it is. Our desire, and the reason why we have to start like this. I know it's like give me something. Okay, give me something. And it's like, no. It's like we have to, I feel like our role as leaders is to say like, no. And you're like, yes, give it. And like, no, hold, understand this. And it's like, no, give me something. It's like, no, understand this. And I feel like even tonight, God's like, will you give in? Would you give in to my love? Would you understand that without this revelation of the love of a father, and I know most of us live without it, I'm talking about myself. Because I know Jane does well. Jane is in a good place when I'm tight with Jesus. Jane is in a good place. There's a confidence. Her insecurities rise up when I'm not in a good space. And her insecurities disappear when I'm tight with God. And I've heard his voice speak over my family and my life and my brokenness and my temptation. And my past, she lives in a good space. So this is real. This is very real, what Matt's talking about. And I actually don't know what to do with it, but we're gonna sing a song now. And I'll tell you why we do this. It's because in 20 years' time, I want to bump into you guys at a coffee station in a church. I want to bump into you on the way to a rugby game. I want to bump into you somewhere. And I want to meet Glenda when I look into your eyes as ladies. And I want to meet Nick. And I want to know that, firstly, you've chosen a man and you've chosen a woman that will develop a Glenda and develop a Nick in you. You didn't give in too early. But then I also want to know that you're still in love with Jesus. So many couples kind of, and I know we're talking about marriage here, but just hang in there a little bit. But so many couples bomb out with God because this relationship doesn't work. They give up on that relationship. And say, God, how could you let this happen? And the whole time he said, but I was trying to whisper to you. And he's saying, God, speak louder. And he says, I'm trying to whisper to you. Come closer. You know, my relationship with my wife is strengthened when I pull away from her and towards God. And then when I have to walk towards her, it's like, I love motorbikes, but it's like when your motorbike's been oiled and it just works. It's like our relationship works when it's been serviced by God, not by me. I try, but I actually hurt my wife. There's times I've done things, I've said things that have hurt her because I've been trying to fix the situation. Sometimes I have to withdraw from the situation, go to God, and God's grace takes care of it. And so, maybe we can stand. Before you stand, sorry, Mitch, sit down. Maybe it's just me. So maybe I look like a fool and I'm just standing. But I really, honestly, often go, God, I actually don't know what I'm doing here. Especially with parenting. Yes, I suck. But like, my marriage, I say, God, I don't know how to do this. And I realize the reason I don't know how to do it is because before I got married, I never understood what love was. And I was like, gung-ho, met my wife. 3 months later, I got engaged to her. 3 months later, we were married, which I'm stoked I did that, so I didn't have sex with her before I got married. So it was like, it was really good for us in that sense. But you know what I didn't understand, and what wasn't good, is that I actually didn't understand love at all. Because I still thought that love would serve me, because I didn't realize that all God was doing was coming down to me the whole time. Serving. I thought, in one sense, it was like, I would go into a relationship and I would find happiness. And God said, what I want to do is I want to make you holy. And I think even tonight, it's like God saying, can I have you? Because I want to make you holy. Because if I make you holy, you'll be happy in your marriage. And I think if Matt's shouting anything tonight, it's like, let God make you holy so that you're happy in your marriage. And so if you're saying that, God, make me holy so that I can be happy in my future, and statistically, most of you are going to get married. Maybe there's a few that aren't. But I'm speaking about marriage because it has to be, if we reverse engineer love from marriage downwards, the process we're in now has to aim somewhere. And we might as well talk about marriage if we're going to talk about any form of love. So you're saying, God, make me holy. Why don't you stand with me? God, Lord, we understand that holiness is just a purity. And we, God, we ask that, would you, as we stand, our desire, the desire inside of us is, we know we have fleshly desires, and sometimes those fleshly desires want to pull us in a direction. But God, we also know right now, the reason we're standing is because there's a desire inside of us that you placed there when you formed us and you molded us. And it's a desire for the purity of a love that comes from a father. Lord, I feel like what Matt's preaching tonight is more, the problem is that we don't know how to receive love more than we don't know how to give love. I pray that you would teach us how to receive love. Lord, I know standing here are some people that don't feel loved, but I also know there's people standing here that love hurt them. What they perceived as love ended up being hurt. But Lord, we also know that perfect love drowns out all fear. And where people are living in fear because they feel like they could be hurt again, I pray that perfect love would come and drown out fear. Lord, there's people standing here that are scared of the future, in relationships, and scared of messing up. Lord, I pray that you would teach us how to receive love, the purity of love, that would come and test our motives, that would come and purify our ways, so we can have a confidence of knowing the love from a father that we can give to someone else. God, I pray, before we head into how to date and marriage and identity and purity and singleness and the things, the questions we're asking, God, I pray that we would ask one question, Lord, that you would show us your love so that we can worship you. And as we learn to worship you, I know, God, you would teach us how to love others. If we can learn to worship you, you'll teach us how to love others. Thank you for your love, Lord. Your love that never fails. Your love that'll never hurt. Your love that'll never abandon us. Some of us have been abandoned, have felt abandoned. And yet you say, here I am. Look at me again. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. Lord, some of us have never... Matt's speaking and he's saying, you guys all know that feeling love. You all know that feeling love. Some of us have felt affection for a person, but we've never been loved by a person. Father, I pray that you take away fear that we'll never be loved. Take away that fear. I know that if a man or a woman doesn't love me anytime soon, I know there's a God, a Father in heaven that wants to whisper into my ear, I love you, my girl. I love you, my boy. I pray that you'd whisper into our ears, Lord.